You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe, New Mexican. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. So you ask a teenage girl, what do you want to be when you grow up? And if she has an idea of what she wants to be, she'll tell you why. Maybe she was inspired by the theater, or doing a science project, or exploring outdoors. Palestinian Dr. Mona El-Farah knew that she wanted to be a doctor by the time she was 13. It was 1967, and she had witnessed firsthand the Six-Day War. She saw people injured and dying in the streets and in hospitals, and she decided that she could be useful if she were to become a doctor. She's now director of Gaza Projects for an organization called the Middle East Children's Alliance, where she's a physician and a human rights advocate. And she will be in New Mexico the first week of December. On December 6th at 6:30, she will be in Santa Fe at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And then the next day, December 7th, she will be at the University of New Mexico in the Sub Ballroom B at 6 in the evening. Many discussions of Israeli and Palestinian politics can quickly devolve into arguments about history and party politics and who the bad guys are. But it's so important, I think, to look at what is happening on the ground, in schools. What happens when a person turns on the water faucet? What happens when they get sick? What happens when a child has lived through 3 bombing attacks by the time they're 12 years old? And how much power there is in the determination of a 13-year-old girl who wants to become a doctor and then 50 years later is still doing the work. Welcome, Dr. Mona El-Farah.
Thank you very much.
What are the most common public health issues in Gaza today?
The public health issues in Gaza at the moment, it is a mixture of chronic illnesses that has increased on top of the usual things. So the common things, I would say that gastroenteritis, bronchial asthma, all the usual public health issues, but it is mixed with increasing patients who are suffering of chronic illnesses like the heart diseases, the diabetes, bronchial asthma due to the pollution of the environment. So it is a mixture of the normal things and something new for our community.
When you say the normal, the usual things, and something that's new for the community, those things weren't there before, like diabetes and things like that?
No, of course, it was before, but the number of patients has increased. For example, cancer was always there, but the number of patients who suffer of cancer has increased too. And we have noticed this after the 3 attacks against Gaza, year 2009, 2012, and 2014. We have noticed that increasing in the chronic illnesses related to stress and increase in the cancer cases. 750 cases of cancer are discovered every year, new cases.
And do you think that that is a result of stress? Do you think it's a result of environmental pollution? What's going on?
You know, especially cancer, it is multifactorial. One factor is the environment. Another factor is genetics, and stress, of course, affects the increased number of patients. I have a feeling. It is a fact, actually. We have been subjected to many sorts of many kinds of war toxins, unusual for us. We don't know the effect of this on the increasing cases of cancer. We don't know exactly because we don't have resources for proper research. But this is something we have noticed as medical health workers, that cancer cases has increased. I correlate it to the war toxins.
What are war toxins?
This is what is left after bombing. Things stay in the ground, in the earth, mixed with water. This is, we call it war toxins. It is the residual of the ammunition that has been used in the explosions against the environment, against the people. For example, I'll tell you something. For example, in the attack of year 2009, they have used white phosphorus against Gaza. And few years later, there was a research about that did not see the light. But the professor who conducted this research stayed in Gaza for 1 year just to follow the mothers who were pregnant at that time and they were exposed to the white phosphorus. She followed the mothers and their babies, and found that the birth defects has increased, and she related it to the white phosphorus. Unfortunately, her research was not published. I don't know why, but I have met her and she told me that this is the facts that she has found in 1 year of her research in Gaza.
You mentioned that these toxins from bombs, from ammunition, get into the water system. Are they part of the water supply that everybody's drinking?
It is mainly, it mixed with agricultural water. So it is part of the water supply of the plants, the agriculture. I don't think the drinking water, no. The water that is used in the fields, because it mixes with the soil and the irrigation water.
And so then it gets into the vegetables that people and fruits that people are eating?
Yes, this is my assumption and our assumption. All of us feel this because this is not usual, the increased number of cancer patients. And as I have told you earlier on, it is multifactorial.
Yeah. What is the status of the drinking water? Is that safe to drink?
The drinking water, 95% of Gaza water is unsafe to drink because of the incompetent sewage system. And that means that the water of the untreated sewage mixed with the water wells, so it is not suitable for drinking, 95%. And this is according to the WHO figures.
And so what are people doing for water?
The water units, like what we are doing in Mecca, we provide schools, desalinization units, and there are companies in Gaza, private companies as well, everywhere. Everywhere in Gaza, people cannot drink tap water because of two reasons. The saline in water is very high, and the other reason that it is contaminated too.
So it's contaminated with sewage, and it's contaminated essentially with salt.
Yes, yeah.
And so people have to buy water, like buy drinking water?
They buy drinking water, but it is not bottled. They buy it like big containers, go from street to another and give supplies to houses. This was not the case in Gaza before.
How long has it been the case?
Yeah, it was like since 10 years ago this started. After 2009, some maybe 2 years before that, but the problem is increasing. Every day it is increasing to the that it has reached the 95% is unsuitable. So it was gradual.
And so are people bathing in that water?
Yes, and I'll give you personal experience. When I go for shower, I can feel the effect of the water. I can taste the salt in the water while I'm showering, and it has effect on my hair. Now I am in Manchester in the UK. I feel immediately the difference in the texture of my hair and how my hair is healthy when I am bathing with soft water. Yeah.
So this problem with water has been going on for 10 years. It wasn't so bad before.
At least. But it was gradual. I say 10 years, it was when we started as Mecca, seeing that the problem and the schools need this and the children need this. But before that, it started gradually. But again, there was another reason, of course. I have mentioned the incompetent sewage system, but also the osmosis, the sea water goes into the underground wells. And for a long time, we had the settlements in Gaza, and they were redirecting the soft water of the water wells to irrigate the agricultural land in the settlements. That was before 2005. And this affected the underground water resources.
So water from the underground water supply, the aquifers, was going to be used as water for settlements, and as a result, the wells became saltier in Gaza?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
What would be needed to solve that problem?
What is needed, like what we are doing, providing the community with water desalination, water units, and also it needs to be more than that. We can use the solar power to support larger units of water purification systems to serve more and more. But this cost a lot of money, so it is government work. It is big government's work. We in Mecca, we do something to solve the problem. In the schools, we do these units, we implement these units. Up till now, 43 units in the schools, and we have another 30, 35 in the kindergartens in Gaza. And the effect was very good on the community and on the children as well, because they managed to drink clean water while they are at school, clean and soft water. The problem is very big, and it needs a lot of resources and determination to solve this problem, but it is a big issue. When you think of the, when you compare the amount of water we use for one person, for example, in Gaza, to that amount that the person in Israel use, they use seven folds more than we use. Again, this is not right, and this is not just as well. We're living on the same piece of land, which is historic Palestine, but they use seven folds, like, compared to our per capita Palestinian people usage of water.
We're talking to Dr. Mona El-Farah, and we're going to take a little break right now to let you know about the Empty Stocking Fund. This is something that helps people who are just trying to get by in our community for the holidays. Let's say somebody needs a car repaired, or money to buy food or clothes, or maybe some home repair. Last year, the Santa Fe New Mexican and a coalition of local partners raised nearly $250,000 that were distributed to applicants. So if you would like to apply or know somebody who would like to apply for funding of this kind, you can go to santafenewmexican.com/empty_stocking for details. And now back to our program with Dr. Mona El-Farah. What kind of medical supplies are available to you, to doctors? Where do you get them, and what supplies are missing?
The supplies, usually we get it as donation from outside Gaza, and some supplies for the big governmental hospitals, they get it through the West Bank. But the medications problem is big problem in Gaza. It is big, big problem, because since long time, and again, maybe since the siege was imposed, 2006, the siege started, 2007, sorry, the siege and the blockade started against Gaza. Since that time, we have had suffering of lack of medications, and we get medications, but it's not enough, and it's not in the right time. And up till now, just before I have left Gaza, 35% of the basic medications are lacking in Gaza, and chronic illnesses medications are lacking too. This is a big problem for us in the medical facilities and in the hospitals, because this affects the routine of the medical services for our patients. And it means that we are all the time running here and there, following up the medications into Gaza. And of course, this affects our services too and resources.
I was thinking, as I'm going about my days, and it's so easy to go to just the local drugstore and pick up stuff that isn't even prescription medicine, just things like aspirin and stuff like that, your basic over-the-counter medical supplies, that there are shortages of those things too?
There are shortage of those things, but the most dangerous too, the shortage of medications for cancer patients, for example. Cancer patients don't have enough medications, enough protocol for their medications in Gaza. And because of the restriction of movement and inability to travel easily outside Gaza, you will end up again with loss of lives because of this, plus the suffering of those patients to get referral outside Gaza. The other issue I have mentioned, the chronic illnesses patients as well, this is lacking most of the times. And the basic antibiotics, the antibiotics for routine usual infections, but the antibiotics for the surgical rooms inside the hospital, this is a big problem. When our surgeons are operating on patients and you need life-saving antibiotics and you don't get it. There are some medications in the private pharmacies, but because of poverty, severe poverty in Gaza at the moment, because of this, most of the people cannot afford to buy the expensive prices of the private sector. So they depend on the government and the non-government sector in getting their medications. Again, this is not right. It's not just, because it doesn't mean that if you are poor, you are not entitled for good treatment. It is not right. It is not right what's happening in Gaza. And again, it is not a humanitarian situation only. It is a humanitarian situation on top of political problem because of the occupation and the conflict. Not the conflict. I don't like to call it conflict because it is not conflict. It is occupation. Israelis are not in Gaza, for example, physically in Gaza, but they are controlling all our lives beside the siege that has imposed on Gaza Strip after Hamas took over.
If a Palestinian, for example, cancer patient wanted to go to a hospital outside of Gaza, are they able to go there?
They are not able because of the borders are closed. The Rafah borders that connect us to Egypt is closed, and the referral through the areas which is controlled by the Israelis, most of the cases do not get permission to leave for even for treatment. Usually when they get referral, they get it to have treatment in the West Bank and East Jerusalem hospitals, but there is a permit. We cannot leave, just take the car and go. You need to have a permit by the Israelis, and the Israelis, most of the times, they don't allow the patients to cross. In some few cases, they allow, but the majority do not get this luxury of having this permit to leave Gaza. During my work as an activist through the years, I have come across cases. For example, the child needs treatment in referral for heart problem, for example, outside Gaza, in Jerusalem, in East Bank, and sometimes in Israel, but now they stopped referring to Israel, just a few cases. That child, age 3 years old, he needs to be accompanied by his father or mother, and they give permit for the child, but they deny the mother or father of the permit. It is very twisted. I don't know what to say. I'm not here to say what is it, but this is a way of intimidating people and making our lives difficult for us. It is occupation, as simple as that. When I say occupation, I say that you don't have any control whatever on your life. If your child is sick, you cannot guarantee that he can get treatment or he'll just die in front of your eyes. The border is closed. The situation is going downhill. The suffering everywhere. There's still lack of water, lack of medications, environmental pollution, food insecurity, unemployment in such a small, very small piece of land, overcrowded, and with a humanitarian problem on top of a political one.
How do you work with trauma, particularly in children and young people? I mean, every single situation that you're describing is very difficult for people, not only medically, but psychologically, especially when there seems to be really no hope on the horizon.
How we deal with that? First, I just start by saying that 200,000 of Gaza kids at the moment are suffering of different sorts of trauma. The number was more than that after 2014 summer attack against Gaza. And this is a huge number. When I'm talking about 200,000, I'm talking about the severely affected trauma, but also most of the children of Gaza are suffering of different sorts of psychological symptoms. Because when you talk about a child age 12, let's say, has gone through 3 major military attacks. When I say military attack, that means bombing, living in darkness, danger, insecurity, all what's around those children is destroyed homes, destroyed buildings. All these circumstances distribute to the psychological well-being of the children, women, and the whole community as well. We deal in different ways. There are specialized centers to receive those children, but our role in Mecca, in Middle East Children's Alliance, is we have a program, we call it Let the Children Play and Heal, where we, in different community centers, children's and adults' community centers in the Gaza Strip, refugee camps and villages, we conduct activities for kids to help them to heal, like get them connected to each other, let them draw, paint, dance, storytelling, music, all these sort of activities, reading, help the children to overcome the situation. And through these activities, the psychologist, of course, and social worker in the program, they watch the children who have real trauma, not just affected with small symptoms, which is not simple. But the trauma is the largest version of the psychological effect, but other symptoms count as well. Our team noticed through playing, of course, because some sort of all activities actually is focused on how to find out those children who are traumatized and need support. And we refer them to the professional centers. This is our technique of work. I believe that we succeeded in that. We have many successful stories through 8 years now. We are doing this for 8 years. And to give the children, either traumatized or not traumatized, a way of hope, entertainment, and to help them to continue in such hard life. That's our way of working with children. And we train the mothers as well. So this support is linked to training the mothers how to look after their kids and themselves in the crisis times, like the attacks. This is the main crisis times when there's the bombing, when the bombing is day and night and danger and the blood and killed people, etc. How to calm their kids and how to deal with them during the attacks. And the feedback we got from the mothers, one attack after the other, that through our courses, they managed to know new things and to help themselves, the family and the children.
How do you train people to survive during bombing attacks?
I'll give you an example about the year 2014, the summer attack against Gaza. First, there was coordination between the different medical facilities in Gaza, emergency and coordination. So there are hospitals, there are centers, there are diagnostic centers. Every day we have expected, because the increasing number of those who were killed and injured every day and the intensity of the shelling and the bombing makes you believe that next day you will be one of those who passed away. The danger was everywhere. There was insecurity, in safety, and the need of the injured and the need of the normal routine patients who are in great need for help. This was a great challenge for us, besides the displaced families. So we opened our centers and we received the patients. We announced in the local radios that we are opened. But in the beginning, patients could not reach us, could not reach medical facilities because of the danger to walk in the streets. So we encouraged them to come to the centers, and sometimes our teams went to people in their homes to offer help. We managed. Yeah. And I remember 3 years ago, there was a big displacement for families in Shaja'iyya area when all the families left their homes because of the intensity of the shelling. And they stayed in schools. They were very close to the emergency center. So they came to our centers, get treatment and have shower. I used to sit with the kids because I was there 24 hours in the center. So to reassure the kids and the team as well, we did different things, not only life savings, social support for the families. But I remember with pain, actually, that when one of the kids, she came to the clinic because the clinic is next to the school and the children are terrified and afraid. And so they think they want to see people. They came to the clinic and they think that the clinic is safer than other places. So once she asked me, "Doctor, when it is going to be over?" I was in pain deep down myself because I didn't have the answer. Because every day we think it's going to be over until we spent 51 days under this heavy shelling and the attack. We helped each other. We helped our patients. And there was a lot of volunteers as well who did great work, youth, females and males. And Mecca, for example, our volunteers did a great job because Mecca was the first to send money for us to buy from the local pharmacies to treat patients. and they sent us money as well to make food parcels for families and hygienic kits for families as well. I couldn't distribute that, the Mecca team, we are three. We couldn't do that without the help of volunteers. So everybody was willing to help. There was great social solidarity, but the burden was high to work in such circumstances.
You lost some family members in that siege in 2014. You've been at this work, I mean, since 1967 is when you got the inspiration to become a doctor. So you've been at this in one way or another for 50 years. How do you take care of yourself?
Oh, I walk, I read, and I am surrounded with wonderful friends. This is one level. The other level, my determination to help people, because they give me strength. I get my strength from the willingness to help people. That's how I manage. I feel satisfied when I feel that I am doing something, because I don't like to see us as Palestinian people losing hope and faith and destroyed. I don't like to see us reaching that degree of destroyment. Yeah, and I get my strength from people, especially women.
What are some of the specific challenges that women and girls are facing in Gaza, Palestinian women and girls?
The outdoors activities and playing is in general very slim in Gaza, small. Yeah. And usually when there is a chance to play outdoors, it is usually the boys are allowed to play outside. The boys can play in the streets. The girls stay at home, and even as children, 10 or 12 or 13 years old. And this is a big problem for me, that boys, despite that the chances of boys is slim, I'm not talking about something magnificent, outstanding. It is all street playing and things. Despite of that, the girls are denied of this. This is the level of the children. The level of adults, no, girls in Gaza can go to the universities, schools, of course, and they have their space when they are older. But it is not a story of boys, girls, males, females. It's a story of the whole nation is suffering together. But when it comes to gender issues, usually girls are affected more than boys. For example, if there was a very poor family and they want to give a chance of education to a child of the family, usually the priority is for boys. Yeah.
Yeah.
But as I have told you, it is not just a gender issue. But the problem usually is doubled for females, because it is some social constraint plus the deprivation.
We're talking to Dr. Mona El-Farah of the Middle East Children's Alliance. The Radio Cafe, in its new incarnation at the Santa Fe New Mexican, is in its third week. And if you would like to support the Radio Cafe, please take a few minutes to subscribe to the Santa Fe New Mexican. Now, you don't have to subscribe to listen to this show, but your subscription does help support the paper and this show. So go to santafenewmexican.com/subscribe. And get all the benefits of this terrific paper, the online edition, the print edition, or both. We are very lucky to have such a great newspaper in this community. So check it out, santafenewmexican.com/subscribe. Now back to our program with Dr. Mona El-Farah. When you look at the big picture, and I mean, I've been interviewing Palestinian people for many years, and this political situation doesn't seem to be getting any better. What is your hope for potential political solutions, and what would it take for them to be realized?
I cannot deny that there is internal Palestinian division. This is another factor. I mean, I can see it clearly that the occupation played great role in all this, but we give them chance as well by our division. This is one factor. So the national unity is very important, and the Palestinian consonants to what do we want. We have struggled hard until we convinced the world, especially after Oslo, of the two-state solution. Now, since Oslo was implemented in Palestine, from that date, 1993, till now, the Israeli practices against us in the Gaza Strip and in the West Bank with the expansion of settlements. Now, the situation, there is no chance for two-state solution. So my future vision for solving the problem is one state, the historic Palestine, for all. Maybe it is you think that I'm a dreamer because Israelis will not accept this, will not agree in one state solution. Even inside the Israeli society, just a small, very small, small minority believe in this, in what I am saying. But things change and politics doesn't stay still. And this is the ideal solution, a comprehensive solution for the instability that has been in our area for a long time. Now there are four generations of Israelis who are living in Palestine, 1948, on the ruins of Palestinian refugees that were forced outside our country, that created the refugees problem. So let's be realistic. The future is for one state solution for all, based on rights, based on fair solution to the refugee problems. And let's be frank, Israel wouldn't continue without the financial, the political, and the economical, the military support of the USA. So first step, Israel must be forced to take its moral responsibility about what happened in 1948 was not just right. The foundation of Israel on behalf of other nations to solve the suffering of the Jewish people under the myth of a land without people. For a people without land, Palestine was fully occupied with its cities and villages with Palestinian people. So I told you in the beginning, now I face the reality, four generations of Israeli, new generation that has been born and brought up, that's their home. And there's the problem of the refugees. The solution is the one state solution, and this is the just, fair solution, in my opinion. We don't have the strength at the moment to do that, but things will change. The strength doesn't mean military strength or a power. It can be morality. Morality with the support and solidarity of all people. Maybe it will take years, but this is what I am proposing. What I'm talking about is the right thing to guarantee Israel's security as well, Israel's safety. And this is the future for generations from both sides. I think of my people, of course, but on the other hand, look at the other hand, Israeli living in a threat all the time, or not threat, I wouldn't say threat, war, instability to live all the time, occupying other people, controlling other people, and there's a break of attacks here and there. This is my political vision for the future.
In order for that political vision to be realized, there would have to be a great change in attitude, because there is so much both fear and prejudice. There's so much, essentially, racism that is taught, and on the part of the military, and everybody, all Israelis have to go into the military, that's part of their service. There's almost a training to look upon you as second-class citizens. How does one overcome that?
Yeah, that's why I said the moral issue is very important, because the truth is that Israel was founded on the ruins of Palestinian people, and it is a racist colonial state, Israel. This should end. This should not happen in this century with the rights and with modern civilizations. It will take time, but it will happen with the pressure, with the solidarity of people who believe in peace and justice, and with the BDS movement. I believe in the BDS movement as a way of resisting the occupation and resisting what has happened to my people all those years. What happened in South Africa is an example that things can change. It is not the time of racism. It is the time of equal rights for all.
BDS, ladies and gentlemen, being boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and people can look that up if they want further information on that. Tell us just a little bit more before we go about the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECCA, of which you are Gaza Project's director.
Middle East Children's Alliance has been founded 30 years ago by Barbara Lubin after the 1982 invasion of Israel to Lebanon. Barbara just felt and realized that what happened that year was just not right and unhuman. And she started to find out more about what happened to Palestinian people, what happened in that piece of land. When she founded MECCA, she was determined to increase the awareness of the American people about what's happening in Palestine before 1948 and after. And started with projects as well. Started with projects in Gaza, in the West Bank, in Palestine in 1948, and Lebanon as well. But the main thing is increase the awareness of the people to find out the truth about what was happening. Now, in Gaza, we have several projects that deal with women, children, students. For example, we have this Maya project providing schools and kindergartens with clean water for the children. And we have the Play and Heal program that helps the children to heal after the trauma. And actually, with trauma or without, deprived children, they need to do beautiful things to enjoy some sort of life in such a traumatized community like Gaza. And we care for the women as well through the courses I have mentioned, the courses of education in the psychological effect on the children and how to deal with their children during the crisis, courses about nutrition, health education courses. We support small organizations, kindergartens, we build playgrounds. We as well do books. We support children with the libraries and books, encourage them to read. There is a special library in Rafah called Rachel Khoury Children's Center. Of course, you know about Rachel Khoury, who was killed defending the Palestinian children. We supply books, different books in all parts of Gaza. We have recently had good connection with a group that we do sports for girls in the schools. We started our latest project is to encourage girls inside the schools to play football and to learn how to ride bikes and different outdoor activities. I'm very, very happy about this because you asked me about boys and girls and I told you the girls usually are deprived of the chance of playing outside. So they play in the school and they are very happy, the kids, the girls, that they have learned to ride the bicycle inside the school. And different things. We have medications. We supply hospitals and medical facilities with basic needed medications. This happens twice every year. And if there was attacks, even we support with medications more according to the situation. We have aid relief for families during the very, very, very bad winter when the winter is very heavy. And there's not floods, but because we, in Gaza, the majority of people live under tin roof houses. It is very basic. And with any increase in the rain, the whole house, not ruined, but flooded the house itself because of the rain. We help those families as well, help them by covering their roofs with plastic sheets, as well as warm clothes for children, blankets. Education, of course, we have our scholarship program. We help the students of impoverished families to continue their education in the local universities. Because I believe when you educate people, you help them to be more chances for work and they can help themselves through education. Some of our students that we have helped became doctors, nurses. Some good jobs. I know there's high unemployment in Gaza, but when you have your certificate, your degree, you can apply for a job and have larger chance than when you don't have your degree. This is, I believe, very important from the experience. We have been doing this for 10 years and I can see the effect on people. The need is very high in Gaza. This year, for example, we have been asked for many things to be done from the community to be done for Gaza, but we cannot respond to everything despite of the importance of the proposals we receive. But, you know, the resources, the financial resources. That's why your support for Mecca is essential, and it helps other people to enjoy even basic things in life, like medicine, clothes, shelters, playing, which we take, people take water drinking as something for granted, electricity for granted, playing for granted for boys, for girls. But in our community, even these basic things, our people are denied this because of the situation.
You will be in New Mexico on December 6th and 7th. What else would you like people to know, and would you like New Mexicans to know?
The first important thing is I want them to, like what Barbara Lubin did when she started reading and finding things away of the media, just find the fact on the ground. I want them to learn more about us, to show their practical support for us and understanding. Because people in Gaza, besides their needs, they need to feel that they are not alone and they are not forgotten. So I want people to strengthen the links between Gaza through Mecca, through practical support. It is through books, through medications. We can use this as a link to link people who believe in peace and justice with other people who are in need for support and understanding.
Dr. Mona El-Farra, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for the interview, and I'm looking forward to see the beautiful people of New Mexico on the 6th and 7th.
If you want to find out more about the Middle East Children's Alliance, you can go to the website Mecca for Peace, M-E-C-A for peace.org. And once again, Dr. El-Farra is going to be in Santa Fe on Wednesday, December 6th at 6:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And then on Thursday, December 7th, she will be at the University of New Mexico sub in Ballroom B at 6 in the evening. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.